3, 2, 1. This is the Insiders Podcast.
So what I've found is for long runs and easy runs, I really like to take the tincture or an edible because it slows me down and hones everything in. I personally, when I train, I like to just go out of the door and just hit the gas right from the start.
Avery Collins, he's an elite ultra marathoner, a cannabis advocate, and a super nice guy. He joins me today to talk about his life doing such a crazy sport. And if you run like me, there's lots of tips in this interview on how to up your run game and maybe how to use cannabis products to enhance your running and recovery. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Insiders Podcast.
Just for perspective, because you can run 100 milers, 200 milers, I just want to know what's your height and your weight?
5'7", 145. Yeah, that probably fluctuates just a few pounds throughout the year. I mean, I definitely put weight on in the winter. And then, you know, naturally in the summer, I'm not only running more, but like you just less water weight, et cetera.
What are the biggest ultra marathon runners, like competitive ultra marathon runners that you see out there? Does everyone tend to be about 150, 160? Is it important to keep your body weight rate down?
I mean, I think for the most part, yeah, that float right around 140 to 160, and that varies by height. I remember hearing that like Rob Krar, who's about my height, was like 130. I can't ever imagine being that weight. And there are a few guys that are like super tiny. I've actually, that's a lie. Once I got down to 135 in college.
Wow.
And you know, it felt great. Some workouts were super fast and super light, but the problem was more often than not, I was just super tired.
Yeah.
And as I got more into ultra running, like I'm finding that I just can't get down that light, but I'm also like never really physically tired or drained.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's even with like large quantity, large volume. I haven't owned a scale ever in my entire life. So I just know my weight because we go to visit, when we visit family, I'll hop on the scale and look, and it's always exactly what I think it is.
Yeah. I like the no scale philosophy. It's like, you know, if you feel good and you look in the mirror and you like yourself, I think that's all that matters. Right. I mean, really.
It's feel, man. It's all feel. Mm-hmm. You know, you start, if you're basing your training on those numbers, it's not going to do you any good.
Psychologically destroy you, I think. Really, you know what I mean? Because you can fluctuate, and then if it's so important to you, that number, and you don't get there, and then all of a sudden it bothers you in the back of your mind, you know, it takes away from everything else.
There's way more important numbers to be analytically like obsessive over than weight, for sure.
Okay, so I've ran for years, many years, decades, but I've never ran like you run. And you started, I believe, on an 8K, and within a few years, you were running extremely long, long runs, ultra marathons. How did you go from an 8 to, you know, 50K, 100, and then a miler? And then I saw that a couple of years ago, you ran in that 200 miler. How did you go from something that's, I guess, attainable for a lot of people to something that's so extreme so quickly?
I mean, I think there was a transition of like you mentioned, when I was running kind of half marathon and under distances, that was hobby running, and in time that turned into obsession, and then it turned into a passion. And, there's a period that I think a lot of runners go through, the obsession period, where, and that's why I jumped into things so fast. I was obsessed, and it's so common. I think nearly every ultra runner does it. It's like, you do your first 50K or 50 miler, and that feeling of like, just the reward at the finish line, conquering through all the mental and physical pain and just hurdles. It's really addicting, and it becomes obsessive. And you see a lot of people do 8, 9, 10 ultras in their first year or 2 years.
Wow.
And then in time kind of figure it out and ramp down. But I call that the obsession period. And I was obsessed, and I wanted to do more and more and see what I was capable of.
Yeah.
And then in time, you know, after a few years, it becomes a passion, and I think the passion is something you have a hold of. You know what's right, what's wrong, how to manage and balance everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also, like, I really, in like a pretty ignorant way, like I thought, just on my own athleticism, I thought, wow, I could be really good at this after my first few ultras.
Yeah.
And I was doing relatively mountain races or big hilly races while training and living at the beach. And I thought, well, I'm doing pretty good at these mountain races while living at the beach. Like, I think I could be really good, if not great, if I moved to the mountains. and
do it full time.
Obviously, obviously, I moved to the mountains, and it did work out. But like, it was just a risk out that was worth taking. In when I told my family that I was going to be a professional runner and dropped out of college, like no one agreed. They may not say it now, but they didn't agree with me at the time.
And of course,
more like I'm going to prove you wrong, yeah. And sure enough.
I love to ask that question, especially when people do something that's extreme like ultra. Like, what does your family say about this, right? Because you always get that perspective. Those are the people closest to you, and they're going to be honest with you. And oftentimes, they're like, you're crazy, right?
Well, and there was an expectation of like a traditional trajectory through life. Like, I was going to finish college, I was going to get a job, so on and so forth. And I've never followed a traditional path in life. I mean, as soon as I got out of high school, I moved out, moved to the beach, and then kind of just jumped all around until I finally found myself in Colorado. But yeah, I mean, it kind of just made sense for the person that I was to just do something that was a little more off the beaten path and not so normal.
Well, you straddled two worlds, at which we spoke about before I started recording. One is the ultra marathon competitive world. The other is using cannabis for recovery, things like that. Can you describe a little bit what role cannabis itself or CBD, THC plays in your ultra marathon running?
Yeah. Specifically to my training, when I actually first started using cannabis, it was actually more as a post-run kind of recovery style.
Yeah.
So when I first started using it, it was just THC. It was just like taking one hitters after the run. And I found that it calmed me down quite a bit. It made me actually chill out. And it like, it took some of that pain away out of the leg so I could just relax on the couch. And over time, it evolved in something that I decided to use during training. And now today, what it has become is I like to take, for instance, like yesterday, I took a quick effects 1-to-1 tincture.
Yeah.
So for people that are not familiar, 1-to-1 just means for every bit of CBD in it, there's just as much THC. Mm-hmm. And I found with the 1-to-1 tincture, I take like anywhere from like 30 to 50 milligrams, that it's not like a pure THC edible that gets you pretty darn high. It's just really manageable. And like, mm-hmm. yes, you, it's like a buzz, but very manageable and controlled. And you just feel like, you're still, still in control of everything. And, so what I found is for long runs and easy runs, I really like to take the tincture or an edible because it slows me down and hones everything in. I personally, when I train, I like to just go out of the door and just hit the gas right from the start.
Yeah.
And if it were up to me and it was possible, I'd go out and run as hard as I could every single day. And what cannabis does, specifically THC, is it kind of reminds me and slows me down because it's just like, especially in ultra running, it's not possible to just go hard every single day.
Yeah.
And then when I am doing a workout, which is, one or two times a week, when I say a workout, something like really speed oriented, I don't take any cannabis because at the end of the day, for me, I run harder and faster without it. So it's, it's something I use 4 to 5 times a week during my run, but it's specifically to actually, chill me out. And then there is obviously the more cliche reasoning, which is like, it is awesome. It's really fun. It helps me enjoy everything around me. It heightens your senses and everything.
How much do you feel and how long, if you were to take it during training and you're actually out on a long run, how much of it do you feel and how long does it last? Because you're burning through everything in your body, right?
Sure. If I'm going out for a long run, say the long run's like 5 or 6 hours, I'll take...
As I laugh, that's insane. Okay.
Well, that almost, like when I was saying it, I was thinking kind of in my head how weak that sounds.
I know, right? Like we said, there's levels to everything. Okay, so if you take a tincture prior to running and you go out, right, how long do you think that has an effect in your body personally?
Yeah. So the quick effects actually last 3 to 4 hours.
Wow.
Even 5. Yeah. And I'm taking a pretty fair amount. But like I was saying, like a run that is 5 or 6 hours or longer, I'll also take a couple edibles with me. For me, I would say it's, basically like 10 milligrams for every hour of the run.
And do you always just have tinctures, edibles? Do you smoke anything? What's your policy on that, especially when it comes to athletics?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's like a seasonal thing for me. I love smoking. Like that's how I started there. Like when I started, there were no edibles. So smoking was all there was. And like, I would say my biggest vice is joints. I love joints. Yeah. It's just, you know, the flavor, the process, like it's just, it's enjoyable. So, yeah. But clearly, like, you know, inhaling something into your lungs as a runner or any professional athlete is not going to be great for you. It's not going to be good for you, period. So typically in the winter, I smoke more than I would, you know, spring through fall. I wouldn't say that I have like any kind of structured schedule this time of the year. You know, it becomes more of a social thing this time of the year. Like if I'm going out with some buddies for a run, then you like, oh, for sure. We're going to hit a bong or a bowl, before the run, also eat some edibles. But like on a day-to-day basis on my own, it's just edibles and tincture.
How does the, competitive running community view cannabis? And that would be like other runners, one, for the most part. And then also the races themselves, are they drug testing you or do they care at all about having THC in your system?
Oh man, there's a lot in that question. Yeah. I'll start with the drug testing. So there are some races drug test, but very, very, very few. One specifically is Western States 100. They started drug testing in 2017. So I got drug tested there. Obviously I passed. maybe listeners don't know. It's a very simple rule. You're allowed to use THC in training, just not in competition. Okay. And it is recommended that you quit 12 hours. So the World Anti-Doping Association recommends that you quit 12 hours before the event. And technically they're testing for, I believe it's 150 nanograms per milliliter of blood in your system, which basically is testing to see if you used within like the last 24 hours. So I'll quit typically a week before, you know, I've pushed it up to 5 days and I pushed it up to 5 days once actually before a race called the Ure 100 and they drug test there as well. And that was 50 nanograms per milliliter, which is actually a much more stringent test, and passed that one as well. So, you know, I've always been one to say, I've always been really skeptical of these people that, cause there's been people in triathlon, a few people that have gotten, drug tested after a race and they popped for THC and they said, oh, it was a CBD product. And I'm a skeptic on that because if you're failing a drug test on CBD, I just don't see how that's possible.
Yeah. If it's straight CBD.
Just like, yeah, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Even like trace amounts, like the tests that they're giving are not designed to pick up trace amounts. They're designed to pick up like if you're smoking a joint during the race.
Yeah.
So there are a few races that test for that. You know, at the end of the day, like I'm definitely, you know, I don't even want to use during the race. But I'm a big proponent of like, I think more races should be testing just because the sport has grown enough that like, I mean, I'm sitting here, this is my job. Running is my job. I'm getting paid to do it. And I know there's lots of other people as well. And I think there should be more drug testing, more for, you know, EPO and for steroid use and like actual performance enhancing drugs.
Even lower level shit like caffeine or ephedrine or something can give you an edge, right? And those aren't like hardcore drugs. That's not steroids or something. But I know like, you know, doing a 20K, that kind of stuff totally gives you like a little jump in your step. So in competitive running, geez, if they're not drug testing of some sort. But that being said, you know, cannabis is one thing and the argument about whether that's performance enhancing or not, I guess is up for debate, but all of the other stuff for sure is important, especially for a guy like you that makes a living on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to protect the integrity of the sport. I think it's super important. And you know, it's funny. Western States actually started drug testing when I got into the race. And it was quite silly because they spent all this money trying to essentially what it appeared to be was catch someone smoking weed, which was very, very silly. Mm-hmm. And you know, some other things developed out of that that they didn't think would develop out of it that I can't really say, that had nothing to do with cannabis and nothing to do with me as well. But, yeah, I just think the whole drug testing to see if someone's doing pot is just absolutely crazy. Can you remind me what the beginning of that question was?
Yeah.
There was something in there that was really good to touch on.
Other runners in particular. How does the community see it? And like, how much of an issue is it? You know, because cannabis as a human being probably doesn't define you, but it's a part of your life. It's a part of your competitive aspect. How do other runners view it? What's the general consensus?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I've been a pretty outspoken advocate now for 8 years. And man, the evolution, the change in people's mindset has been incredible. I mean, it's just like a complete 180. You know, obviously regionally, it's going to change quite a bit. Anything West Coast, I would go as far to say is like majority of ultra runners use, whether mm-hmm. they like are, you know, outspoken about that or not, but especially in Colorado, I don't know an ultra runner that does not use cannabis. To
really?
Some extent.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. It is incredibly common, And then even like, cause I usually go out to the East Coast, especially like North Carolina, Virginia, every single year to either run or race. And I've started to notice people out there. I've got more people out there that follow me and like love what I'm doing than I do even on the West Coast. So there's been this total 180. And like, it used to be like when I first got into it, people were definitely, I'll just say they were talking shit. And like now, now it's, you know, everyone's on my team. It's just like, it's really crazy to see that transition. But there was a lot of like, we'll just say just haters like on Facebook and Instagram 8 years ago in those first few years. Whereas now it's just like, it's so common. And especially now that states like Arizona legalized, Virginia, and you got a few Northeastern states. I think people are just totally coming around on it.
I think there's been a lot more research done in the last 5 years, at least, especially in Canada, on the benefits of medicinal cannabis use. And medicinal is such a wide-ranging term, but how you can take it in ways that can, for example, calm your muscles down, calm you down psychologically. And a lot of people are now experimenting, myself included, taking things and going for runs and seeing, you know, if I smoke this vape and I go for a long run, how do I feel? And I'm testing different strains and all that kind of stuff. We're all getting more familiar with the benefits of it. So that's probably a big part of it. When you travel over borders, like you went and did the Tour de Géant, is that how you say it? Tour of Giants, which is a 200-mile run. By the way, great video series on YouTube, by the way. That was awesome.
Thanks, man.
Do you have
it
any...
didn't turn out the way we expected it to, but thank you.
Dude, man, it was grueling watching it and just seeing, like, what was that, 4 days? Oh my God, and barely any sleep.
85 hours, whatever that is.
Yeah, okay. Three and a half, okay. Barely any sleep. And I can see you, like, as you went on and on and on, your body was getting more fatigued, your legs were getting tired, you're cramping up. And by, like, the final day, for me to run 30K, I feel like that. I can't even imagine what you feel like. How was it crossing borders, though, as a cannabis advocate? Was it like zero issues? Do you ever get concerned about that?
Oh, no. I mean, and especially international travel, I don't take any THC. I'll take CBD with me because I'm pretty sure CBD is legal everywhere now. But I've never had any problem with that. And actually, I even get quite a bit of love internationally. When I went out to Italy for that race, I had a couple French riders reach out to me that wanted to do some stories, because at the time, the same year as the year I did Tour de Géant, they had just legalized CBD, basically across all of Europe. And it was a little weird in France at the time, but, I think more than anything, the Europeaners think it's really interesting. It's a little like, for them, it's like interesting to like, almost like it's taboo. Whereas out here, it's not so, I don't think it's so taboo anymore. I think it's just kind of the norm.
Yeah.
There are no issues though. It's not like, I've never had anyone just like point at me and like say I'm a cheater or anything, but, no, I think they're really intrigued by it. Like, it's this crazy thing, although it's not as crazy as they think it is.
Yeah. Talk to me about the psychology of, you know, any long ultra distance. Do you have phases where you're feeling amazing, phases where you want to quit, phases? How do you get through it? And like if you're running for 3 days straight, what's going on in your mind for the most part? Is it blank, or are you like thinking deep thoughts? I know for me, I always feel like long runs allow me to meditate, the blood flowing, right? What's it like for you for something so extreme?
Yeah. Tour as a 200-mile race with, you know, just so much big vertical was a very different race than something like most of the hundreds I've done. Mm-hmm. You know, most hundreds, now that I've done so many of them, like, I kind of know I'm going to go through these periods of like, fuck, this really sucks. And I know that's going to pass. Whereas Tour was a lot different. Tour, I went into, I didn't know it at the time, but injured. I got in a car wreck 2 weeks before the race. And the race didn't go my way mentally. It was probably the most difficult mental battle I ever had, because, truth be told, really from like mile 20 to 100, I wanted to quit. I didn't have this like gear that I was banking on. Like I, most races I go into it, I start easy. I let people either blow up or I'm just going to catch them because I'm going to increase my speed through the race. Yeah. I never had that. I never was in a podium spot or in contention for a podium spot. So for me, that was like the biggest mental battle I ever had because it was something I wasn't used to. And you know, it's kind of hard to say what kept me going. I think it was just, I trained all summer for that. And it's just like, there's no turning back now. This is the way it is. And I had a mental turnover around, you know, 120 miles. And I decided like, I'm just going to enjoy this. Like,
right.
I don't have a choice. I need to just enjoy this. But that race is like kind of an anomaly because it's in Italy. Like it took forever to get there. All this money goes into it. All this training, like mm-hmm. you have to finish.
Sponsors.
You know, it becomes easier actually to not finish a race in the US where it's just like, oh, I just drove over here 10 hours away. Mm-hmm. So like when you go through those periods in a really long race, like 100 kilometers or 100 miles here, it takes actually a different level of mental strength because, you know, when things aren't going wrong, it's just a little bit easier to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
But I think it's just, you know, I think it's just more competitive drive. Like I just ultimately, I do believe because the races, especially 100-mile race, it's so long, you've got ample opportunity to catch up. URA 100 being a prime example, I took a wrong turn and went from first to last. And I told myself, I'm like, there's 70 miles left. Like, I know I'm going to catch first.
Yeah.
Like without a doubt. I mean, 70 miles is a really long way. So you always have to remind yourself that like anything can happen and you just got to believe it's not over till it's over. And you know, that totally changes when you start to get into a race that's like 50 kilometers or 50 miles, there's a little less room for error. And you've got to be more locked in and not, like you can't really have as many, if any, mental breakdowns or physical for that matter.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a couple of silly questions about ultra running here. Cause I've never run an ultra. So that's beyond so far in my life. There's no such thing as listening to music when you run an ultra. There's no headset that will allow you to listen for that long. Is that right? Like it's impossible. You just, that option's off the table for an ultra runner. Is that right?
So like my general rule of thumb is I usually do the first half, no music. And then, sometimes back half I'll put music in. I mean, I would say every 1 in 4 races I use music. More often than not, I usually just prefer mm-hmm. just to be kind of in my own head and work through whatever I'm working through. But there is definitely something to be said about in a 100-mile race, putting music in the last 30 or 40 miles and turning on something you know is just going to get you amped as fuck.
Right.
Just letting it rip because it's, you know, your body always has a little bit more left to tank. And there's, I don't know what it is, but there's something about turning on a song that you know gets you pumped up and you can go from like feeling like complete shit to just like mm-hmm. turning it on.
I hear that. Now, this is a really stupid question answered any way that you want, but I'm curious about the answer. You have aid stations, but they can be like miles and miles apart. What do you do if you have a bad stomach and you need to take a shit? Honestly, yeah. do you just find yeah. a patch of forest, go, and do you carry toilet paper or tissue?
Yeah, no, that's not a weird question at all. I'm kind of a weight freak, and I know toilet paper doesn't weigh anything. It's like, I say every other 100-miler, I do carry toilet paper, or I don't. I'm just like, fuck it, I'm going to go lightweight, which is like, a toilet paper doesn't weigh anything. But yeah, you totally just find a spot. But I mean, kind of like, a trick that I've been using for a long time is just, I always carry Tums or Gingins. Uh-huh. Both of them work really well with stomach problems, but like if I start to feel any onset of stomach pain, I immediately start pounding Tums. And even like once I get like 12, 14 hours into an event, I'll start taking a Tum or two every hour, like preventatively.
Oh, really? Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. What about chafing? But do you have wax or some kind of cream or something that you use? Because I mean, running for 3 days, I can only imagine, you know, what you go through.
Oh yeah, I mean that. If you're not using any kind of anti-chafe, which there's a few different companies now. I think like Body Glide and Squirrel's Nut Butter, they're called. Just like directly underneath the arms for me is kind of a like where the armpits are. Which honestly, you can just like over just like. You could use deodorant and just like, instead of just doing it just on your pit, just put it on like the backside of where, you know, your the crease is, where your arm meets your lat, and then in between your legs. Those are the only two problematic spots for me. And I can actually go a pretty long time without having any real chafing there. But if it's going to be a hot, humid race where, like, you know, you're going to be really wet, like something like Kurt 100 in Hawaii, I use a lot of Body Glide. And even like halfway through, I'll take a towel, dry down real quick, and then reapply.
Okay. Do you have something that you carry with you if you notice your muscles are really seizing up? Like, is magnesium kind of a thing you might dip into? What would you take if you feel, I mean, water is key. That probably is the fundamental thing. But if you notice like your quads are seizing up, or your one of your calves or something, is there something you go to?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a pretty crucial mistake a lot of beginning ultra runners make. Even people at my level, it can be hard to, they're easy to make that mistake, but that's something I try to actually take care of preventatively. So I use the hydration mix, and the hydration mix will have sodium, magnesium, potassium, all the electrolytes needed to help aid in hydration. And then also, I mean, if I feel like I've been slacking, I'll take one or two salt. They make these little salt pills that I think are just straight sodium and potassium. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, I try to just rely on a hydration mix, because I mean, most races, if it's long enough, I'm going to be carrying two water bottles on my pack, and each water bottle will have like 350 to 400 milligrams of sodium. And like, for a runner that's listening, you don't necessarily want to mimic what I'm doing. That's based on my own,
of course,
how much I sweat and how salty that sweat is. But for any runner, period, you should be taking, if your run is over an hour, you should be taking some kind of hydration mix or salt pills. It's only going to help you stay hydrated.
Yeah, I feel like 1 hour for me is about that spot where if I go beyond, for sure, I have to think about nutrition. Under an hour, whatever, right? You drink sparkling water too. So what's your setup with liquid? Do you prefer sparkling over regular? And is that just to keep your mouth fresh while you're running? Is that the sodium?
That's such a European thing. So in the US, there's like they don't ever have sparkling water at the aid stations. Whereas like, you go to any European race, you have the option of sparkling water or regular water.
Yeah.
So I'll usually just do one in one, or I'll just take sparkling water at the aid station. It's more or less, it's just like, it's refreshing.
Okay.
The amount of sodium content in most of those sparkling waters, I don't think is usually enough for you
to rely
on someone to say like, oh, this is enough.
Yeah.
Like, it'll help. I think it's more of a refreshing thing. The only thing I would say is with the sparkling water, you just have to be careful, because it can make you feel full, like it makes
gassy.
You feel like, and you still need to be eating. And when you're drinking sparkling water, it can make you feel like you don't need to eat. And it's just so imperative that you're in a long ultra that you're still maintaining around 200 calories or more an hour, depending on your body weight.
Okay. What are a couple of key things you keep in your bag that you would recommend to people? Because I mean, obviously your kit's your kit, right? So,
Yeah,
what do you have with you that's crucial? A couple of key items.
So, I mean, specifically training, I feel like I have to say that first. So if I'm going out for a training run, like here in the San Juans where I live, there's water everywhere. So I take a Katadyn B-Free. It's just like a water filter that's built into a soft glass. So it weighs nothing. And it means I can go out and run all day and not have to worry about water. That's probably one of my favorite tools. And then I'll take out, like I said, like these, I'll take, you know, one or two quick effects, edibles with me. If it's a really long run, it's also not uncommon for me to take a little bit of tincture. It just helps alleviate some of the inflammation earlier. It's just like another preventative, so that when I get home, there's less inflammation. I can start recovering faster.
Mm-hmm.
And then around here, I mean, this is like kind of specific to living in the mountains. It's pretty rare to go on a run and not bring a jacket and possibly even gloves, like even in the dead of summer, because like a storm can roll in immediately. And as long as I've got a jacket, like that makes me feel fine, because most importantly, I just need something to keep me warm so I get off the mountain. And then, you know, once you're below tree line, it's usually not too bad. And then, sunglasses, man. You can't survive around here without sunglasses. Our UV index is always like 11 out of 11 year round. So I actually started using sunglasses called Method 7 lately. They use just a really high-end polarization technology that is phenomenal for high UV exposure. And then like for me, what's important is like coming in and out of tree line.
Yeah.
It's just frustrating when you're, if you're above tree line, like the sunglasses always work fine. It's once you get into the trees and there's rocks and roots and shadows everywhere.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a pair of lenses that don't like make the shadows worse than what they are.
Yeah, of course. I notice when I trail run here on the island, running downhill and my speed is up a bit, I notice that it can be darker when you're in the trees, and wearing dark sunglasses can be hamper you. But at the same time, I find that it keeps the wind out of my eyes, keeps my eyes from watering. There's that.
Yeah,
dirt. Do you have a solution for that, or you just keep your glasses on and roll with it?
Lately, I've been keeping them on. The Method 7s are really, really good for that.
Okay.
But I get it. Where you're at, it's like, I mean, Vancouver Island is rooty, right? Like super rooty.
Super rooty, yeah. Yeah. So you got to be able to see where you're going for sure. And it's all windy, especially if you take bike trails and things, right? So.
And it's slick. Isn't it just slick? It's not.
It can be. Like in the summer, right now, it's all drying up and everything. But if you're running in the wintertime, you got to watch where you're going. Like put the brakes on a little bit. Make sure you step on a root, especially. That's the worst, you know, blow your ankle out. I'm almost done. What do you say to people? And like, use me as an example. What do you say to people who say, how do you do it? Like, how do you break through that psychological barrier and become an ultramarathon runner? Because for some people, it just doesn't compute.
Well, I mean, I guess I'd preface that question with, unless if you have a handicap or some kind of disability, I genuinely believe that majority of humans are capable. It's just a matter of, you got to become comfortable with the uncomfortable, which is, it's definitely easier said than done. But I mean, I enjoy what I'm doing.
Yeah.
That's how I do it, is I enjoy it. So, you know, and that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt and it doesn't suck, and doesn't mean that I'm not always balancing injury after injury. It just means that I've made a conscious decision to enjoy what I am doing. And I mean, and I think that's exactly like going back to the mental aspect during a race. I've chosen to do this. I knew good and well this shit was going to hurt. And I've chose to enjoy the pain. And that alone can get you through an ultra marathon, is if you make the conscious decision that I'm going to enjoy this, even when it sucks, then you're going to make it. I mean, there's just like this like moment I always remember in my mind. I was at Hurt 100 and I left out of an aid station, and I was like 20 feet out of the aid station and just projectile vomited everywhere. And this lady is just staring at me. She goes, "Are you okay?" And I look at her and I smile and I go, "Never been better." And then just took off. Man. And it was like, it totally sucked, but it was like, I knew it was going to suck, and I just chose to just, I was going to embrace that.
It's so psychological, man. So psychological.
100%.
As for cannabis products, who are your sponsors and what products would you recommend runners check out?
Yeah. So I'm actually sponsored by a parent company called Medically Correct. They make a variety of incredible products. Specifically what I'm using from Medically Correct right now is Trupura, which is a CBD tincture. So I put that in the recovery drink, or like I said, right after a really big run, I'll take that. And then in terms of like THC use, I've been using Quick Effects. Big thing with Quick Effects, which is really awesome. And this kind of takes away from the questioning. Like, I think most people don't like edibles because they take so long to kick in. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about Quick Effects is it has a much faster absorption rate, anywhere from like 15 to 30 minutes. And you start to feel the psychoactive, you know, the high effect from them. You know, if you're a new cannabis user, I would highly suggest either their 1-to-1 tincture or even like their 20-to-1.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's not going to get you as high, and it's just much more mellow. And then if you're an avid user, the Quick Effects sativa chocolates and indica chocolates are awesome. Take as many as you want.
I don't think we have Quick Effects in Canada. What form does that come in? Is it a powder? Is it a tincture? Is it chocolates, like you said?
Yeah. So Quick Effects makes a tincture, so like an oil, and then they also make chocolates as well.
Okay.
But Medically Correct as a brand, they make a I mean, I've been under them now for almost 8 years in some capacity. So they make another edible called Incredibles. And that was my very first ever sponsor 8 years ago. And this was previous to before they had this parent company called Medically Correct, but they make a lot of really, really high end, high quality products, which is, I'm grateful that I can run for a cannabis company that is making high end products. And like, I can boast about them confidently.
Yeah, fair. Any topicals for recovery? Anything like that?
Yeah, you know, I like topicals. I find that I'll be real, THC works best. But they make, so Quick Effects also does, this is kind of one of a kind product.
Yeah.
I don't know of another product that's like this, but they do a topical that has 1,000 milligrams of THC in it. Yeah, dude, it is a heavy hitter. It is so awesome. You know, they say that the topical doesn't give any psychoactive side effects, but I used, my guess was like 150 milligrams and it did. I think it did give me like a minor psychoactive effect, but not much. And I would say in terms of like the best bang for your buck, I get the Quick Effects 1,000 milligram tincture, or sorry, topical. Mm-hmm. Just because like, I think it like you get an effect from it. And you know, I just think at the end of the day, like your body's going to absorb THC and CBD in a much more efficient way. If you're taking it, if you're digesting it, putting it on your skin is just, I don't think that's an efficient way of absorbing CBD or THC.
Last question. Isn't it nice, first of all, to have had a conversation right now where the word COVID hasn't come up one time?
Dude, not one time.
Not one time. But this one is about COVID. So now that COVID is becoming behind us, what's your game plan for competing, I guess, for the rest of 2021 and beyond?
Yeah. So right now I am contemplating, there's, you know, a relative chance I'll run, it's called San Juan Solstice 50. It's a 50 miler at the end of June here in, the San Juan Mountain Range. And then, the big A race of the year is, CCC by UTMB out in Chamonix.
Yeah.
I guess one of the more exciting races on the list is, it's called the, Snowman Race. It's on the Snowman route. It's in, it runs through the Bhutanese Himalayas. It's a 5-day stage race. You go over 12, 16,000 foot passes and 2 18,000 foot passes.
Holy shit.
Over the course of, I think it was like 220 miles or something, relatively far. And then assuming I can get down there in December, I will either do, Cape Town 100K, or we're waiting for information on Oman.
Yeah.
It's a big mountain race, also put on by UTMB. They haven't done it the last 2 years, so we're kind of just waiting on information for that.
Cape Town's a 100K, hey, that's like nothing.
100 kilometers is a phenomenal distance. I love that distance.
Wow. Well, okay, thanks for doing this, man. I really appreciate it. It took up about 40 minutes of your time, but a great interview, and for me very fascinating because I'm a runner and I like my cannabis. So I've been watching you for a long time and I'm always fascinated by what you do and everything about you, so thank you. I appreciate it.
Michael, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for the interview.
All right. Shout out to Avery for taking the time to tell us about his crazy life. Follow him on Instagram at Runnin' High. That's without a G, Runnin' High. And on Twitter at Avery_Collins. And if you like what I do, follow me to Insiders Podcast online. And if you have a story that you'd like to tell, reach out to me, michael@distinctmedia.ca. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Insiders Podcast. We do our very best to be as accurate as possible, but take no responsibility for inaccurate details or facts. If a topic interests you, we're happy to have brought it to your attention, but please take the time to research the details for yourself. To find out more about Insiders Podcast and all of the work that we do, check out distinctmedia.ca.